You're listening to the N2K Space Network.
With over 8,000 threat hunters analyzing over 65 trillion signals daily, Microsoft works tirelessly with the federal government to keep our nation's data secure. This 30-year-plus partnership is driving mission innovation that is secure by design. Whether optimizing your existing defenses or tackling advanced threats with AI, Microsoft gives you the intelligence and the automation you need to defend at mission scale. Let's work together to stay ahead of emerging threats and secure your mission anywhere. Learn more at aka.ms/fedcyber. That's aka.ms/fedcyber.
In some parts of North America today, the sun got a little shy, hiding behind the moon. And if you were in the path of the eclipse's totality, I hope it was a spectacular experience you'll remember for a lifetime. And for everyone else somewhere on the eclipse's path today, I give you the kindest wish for anyone skygazing. I hope your view wasn't obscured by clouds.
T-minus 20 seconds to LOS egress. Go for deploy.
Today is April 8th, 2024. I'm Maria Varmazis, and this is T-Minus. UKSA announces £13 million funding boost for international partnerships. Space Workforce 2030 shares its second annual report. SpaceX launches the first bandwagon rideshare mission. And our guest today is Melanie Strickland, Executive Director of Space Workforce 2030. She will be talking about the initiative's second annual report that was shared today at the 39th Space Symposium. So stay with us for that. Let's get into Monday's briefing, shall we? It's day one of the 39th Space Symposium, and the T-Minus team are here in Colorado Springs. Thousands of others from across the space industry are also joining us to network, make sideline deals, and to share information that will move the industry forward. Many international agencies and organizations are also in attendance. NASA, for example, is sending astronauts Jessica Watkins and Raja Chari, as well as Deputy Administrator Pam Melroy, to the conference. The U.S. Space Agency says that their leadership will focus on space sustainability at this year's conference. Pam Melroy will be delivering a keynote on responsible exploration, preserving the cosmos for tomorrow. And the U.K. Space Agency is using the symposium to promote its international partnerships. UKSA has announced that it will be supporting 11 projects through the agency's International Bilateral Fund. The £13 million funding boost aims to support the UK space sector in working with international partners on innovative projects. This is the Phase 2 grant allocation of the fund, and it includes research projects that will allow four UK universities to work with international research institutions such as MIT. Other announcements from Space Symposium today include the Space Workforce 2030 Initiative second annual report. You'll hear more details on that in our chat with the inaugural executive director of the initiative, Melanie Strickland, later in the show. SpaceX launched a new rideshare program called the Bandwagon this weekend. 11 satellites hitched a ride on a Falcon 9 rocket to a mid-inclination orbit, hence the new mission name. The rideshare launched from Florida with SpaceX sharing video of the takeoff, but it ended its live stream early at the request of its customer, South Korea, which flew its Project 425 SAR, or Synthetic Aperture Radar, satellite, on the mission. Also on board were Hawkeye 360's Clusters 8 and 9, which the company has already announced were successfully deployed, Tyvak International's Centauri 6, IQPS's QPS SAR 7 Tsukuyomi 2, Capella Space's Capella 14, and Tata Advanced Systems Limited TSAT 1A. And while those satellites were heading up this weekend, three crewmates from the International Space Station headed down back to Earth. NASA astronaut Laurel O'Hara landed back on Earth after a six-month research mission aboard the ISS, along with Roscosmos cosmonaut Oleg Novitsky and Belarus spaceflight participant Marina Vasilevskaya. The crew returned on a Soyuz MS-24 spacecraft, which landed safely in Kazakhstan. KBR says it has been awarded new contracts estimated at more than $450 million to deliver highly technical systems engineering support and services to the U.S. government. The contracts focus on sustaining both space and ground systems, enhancing acquisition efficiency via digital engineering, and supporting secure communications, information technology systems, and data analysis. Work is expected to be reformed through 2031. And finally, NASA engineers have figured out why the Voyager 1 spacecraft has been transmitting gibberish for the last 5 months. It seems like old age has caught up with the vehicle, and of course, it's a memory issue. A small portion of corrupt memory, to be precise. Now that the team understands what took the spacecraft offline, they're hopeful that they can get the spacecraft back to fully operational and transmitting useful data. A memory issue, huh? I have never related so much to a spacecraft in my entire life. That concludes our briefing for today. We'll be bringing you updates from the Space Symposium throughout this week, along with special guests from the AWS Aerospace and Satellite booth. You'll find links to further reading on all the stories I've mentioned in our show notes, along with an announcement from our friends at Lone Star Space on their next lunar data center mission. N2K Space is working with Amazon Web Services Aerospace and Satellite to bring the AWS in Orbit podcast series to the 39th Space Symposium in Colorado Springs from April 8th to 11th. And we are broadcasting from the AWS booth number 1036 in the North Hall, Tuesday through Thursday from 9 to 11 a.m. So come on by the booth to catch us in action and share your story with us. Or email us at space@n2k.com to set up a meeting with our team. Hey, T-Minus crew, every Monday we produce a written intelligence roundup. It's called Signals and Space. So if you happen to miss any T-Minus episodes, this strategic intelligence product will get you up to speed in the fastest way possible. It's all signal, no noise. And you can sign up for Signals and Space in our show notes or at space.n2k.com.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
As we mentioned earlier, the Space Workforce 2030 Initiative released their second annual report today. T-Minus producer Alice Carruth spoke to the initiative's inaugural executive director, Melanie Strickland, about those results, but started by asking Melanie to walk us through the nexus for starting the initiative.
It's an initiative that was started a couple of years ago by a cohort of 30 of the leading space companies around our country and Aerospace Corporation in collaboration with those leaders from those 30 companies. I was one of those CEOs at the time that signed and pledged Slingshot Aerospace to the awesome opportunities that lied ahead. And that was cornered and still is on the tremendous push and boundaries of space innovation. The market continues to grow at a rapid pace, but unfortunately, our graduating STEM degree individuals are actually going down. So the numbers of those that graduate with STEM are going down at a rate that is not commensurate with the growth of STEM-related jobs. And so what Space Workforce 2030 came together to do is to eliminate that talent gap. And at the heart of, you know, that expansive innovation of everything that we do on orbit is a workforce, right? It is the people, those whose creativity, those whose ingenuity really drive our nation to the apex of global space leadership. And so what better time than in midst of a STEM crisis to really examine the problem and get in and build that bridge across that gap. And it takes all. That's why this is a cohort of the leading companies and those that really care about how their talent is comprised within their company. Those that understand that diversity around the scrum room to the boardroom help us continue to have a U.S. Global leadership position around the world. And that leadership position is synonymous with global leadership on orbit. I'm excited to be part of it and excited and honored to lead it.
This has been going on for a couple of years, and I believe you're just releasing the second annual report on this. Can you walk us through some of the findings that you found for the space workforce?
You know, as part of our commitment to ensuring that the workforce meets the accelerating needs that we just talked through about our nation's space industry, as part of the original pledge, said, hey, we are going to publicly share our progress and hold ourselves accountable to the increase in the number of women and employees from underrepresented groups in our collective talent base. So this year, the 2022-23 results will be presenting that aggregated data. We have had meaningful improvements in both women and people of color in our technical staff. We've had meaningful increases in people of color interns and intern hires under our National Space Intern Program and those adjacent intern programs within our partner companies. And the results really show encouraging progress. You know, this I do want to say this is a journey. This is not a destination necessarily. And so we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but the results are encouraging. Women in technical staff went up about 0.9%. People of color went up 1.4% in those technical staff roles. The interns, we dipped down a little bit on the women, and we went up in people of color by 1.9%. So we're looking to increase intern conversions this year. And so some of the expanding possibilities there is opening the aperture for interns. Originally, to be a space national space intern, you had to be a woman or a person of color. We're actually opening that up, and you had to come through our website and register. And so now we're saying, look, let's count all interns that are part of our partner companies. And let's make sure that we're, you know, sharing that data collectively. So next year we'll be raising the fidelity of that intern and intern conversion as we see it today.
Now, one of the things you just picked up on was the lowering rate of women in aerospace. You've been a CEO and founder yourself. Why do you think it is that women aren't attracted to these STEM roles in the aerospace industry?
We have to think about the education to space workforce pipeline holistically to answer that question. And I don't think that it's that women aren't interested. I think that we have to go back to K through 12, and we have to go back to, you know, graduate and undergraduate levels and show opportunity. Expose more people, expose more women and people of color to the opportunity space. A lot of folks just believe that, you know, being part of the space industry means you have to be top of your class in mathematics and science and technology. And in order to be part, you have to be an engineer. And so we've got to expose that there are more technical roles and more interesting roles out there than they may have been exposed to previously. A lot of people think in order to be in space, you have to be an astronaut, right? And we all know that that is probably the thinnest percentage of the space industry. And there's so many exciting new roles with this growing, exponentially growing space economy. Even fashion designers are now designing the next lunar spacesuit. So There's something for everyone, and we've just got to make sure that women and people of color, which are the largest opportunities that we're seeing through our data, that they're exposed and that they can see it to be it. And that's why it's so important that we've got these three pillars. It starts with K through 12 at Inspire, goes to Prepare, which is the graduate and undergraduate, and then it moves on to Employ. And Employ isn't just converting an intern. It's retaining. It's making sure that all employees belong and sharing best practices across our leading space companies on what's working to retain that talent within our ecosystem. And most companies don't typically share that information, especially in a competitive landscape. So Space Workforce 2030 is special in that regard, that it's been able to facilitate an open communication path so that we can work together to not just increase, but retain and certainly get out there and expose opportunities earlier on to children, to little girls, to people of color and underrepresented groups that don't typically have that exposure through their school systems.
So you're relatively new to this role to lead this initiative. What is it you're hoping to achieve going forward? Now you've had the second year report come out. What is the first big thing for you to achieve?
So my role is to come in and use the principles that I learned in both the Air Force and in my previous entrepreneurial journey to scale this organization and to scale our impact, to reach more people. And how do we do that? And how do we fundraise against that so that we can sustain this? And how do we, it's not just the monetary side of it. How do we add more human capital to this from the perspective of partners? So in our partner companies right now, it is for-profit companies. This year, under my leadership and under the new landmark partnership between Aerospace Corporation and Space Foundation, it really allows us under this charitable nonprofit to expand into other organizations, other government organizations, other nonprofits. So you'll see some scale in that regard. That will be new. I mentioned earlier with our National Space Intern Program that we're opening that aperture to include all interns that are part of these companies as a national space intern. You no longer have to be of a certain demographic, a certain race, a certain gender to register, nor do you have to come through our program to be considered a national space intern. Now, that's company by company. They have to make the decision to allow their interns to be part of this or empower them, I should say, to be part of this. But we're seeing wide acceptance of this, and that's great. Another thing is on the K-12 side, when I first landed, there was an effort to reinvigorate something that had started back in 97 as a small kind of grassroots effort to celebrate space on a certain day of the year, the first Friday of May. And so with that, we've put a lot of push behind getting a National Space Day really on the books for our nation, for our kids to come together and celebrate space. So this year, Space Workforce 2030 has put together a streaming event that'll happen on May 3rd, which is a Friday. And every fourth and fifth grade class around the nation will have opportunity to access this live stream. And these are influencers from NASA to astronauts to those that built the robots that roam on Mars to policymakers and spacesuit makers. I mean, you name it. The people that are taking our space industry to the next level are answering questions that these 10-year-olds very authentically exposed us to, and they're the best questions in the world. And these leaders in our industry are answering them, and that's going to be streamed out. And that will be our first effort in formalizing National Space Day.
If there's a company listening right now that's perhaps a small startup that thinks maybe I don't have a place in this, what would you say to them? Would you encourage small companies to get involved in the Space Workforce 2030 initiative?
I do. And that's part of our scale as well. I talked about other organizations, government and nonprofits. And certainly there's a place for startups within Space Workforce 2030. What we do is we build these committees from those folks that want to volunteer their time as part of what they're doing inside their company, but as a collective. So each one of these pillars, inspire, prepare, and employ, have representation from these companies. Now, a startup may not have the time to go across all three. They may say, hey, we do have someone that goes out and does STEM, you know, once a quarter. Well, great. Sign up for our pledge. Let's help you as you help us extend that opportunity to within your STEM efforts, right? So there's a place for everyone within Space Workforce 2030, but you have to pledge and you have to commit and you have to dedicate time to this if you're going to be part of Space Workforce 2030. It's not about a logo and it's not necessarily about quotas, right? We want to build the best space workforce in the world. And in order to do that, it does take time, it takes effort, it takes dedication, and it takes commitment. So startups have a lot on their plate. But if you want to be part of Space Workforce 2030 and you can do those four things with us and side saddle with us, we welcome you.
We'll be right back.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.
Welcome back. Now, some of you got to enjoy a total eclipse today, though many of us are happy to suffice with a partial. And the crew currently aboard the ISS, they just missed getting to see totality, but they did pass through the eclipse's path three times today, with one of those pass-throughs over Labrador, Canada at 94% occlusion. The sun wasn't 100% covered by the moon for them, but 94% partial eclipse is not bad at all. Plus, they did have the best view of all, zero chance of clouds getting in their way in low Earth orbit. And yes, they did need to use the same solar eclipse viewing glasses that we all have down here. Protect those peepers. In case you were wondering, not everyone in low Earth orbit got a view of the eclipse today. The Tiangong's path today didn't take it over North America, so the crew aboard China's space station unfortunately didn't get to see it. And who else missed it from space? Well, the three crew who just returned to Earth over the weekend via a Soyuz spacecraft, off by just 2 days. May that be some consolation, I suppose, for all of us who also missed out. That's it for T-Minus for April 8th, 2024. For additional resources from today's report, check out our show notes at space.n2k.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at space@n2k.com or submit the survey in the show notes. Your feedback ensures that we deliver the information that keeps you a step ahead in the rapidly changing space industry. We're privileged that N2K and podcasts like T-Minus are part of the daily routine of many of the most influential leaders and operators in the public and private sector, from the Fortune 500 to many of the world's preeminent intelligence and law enforcement agencies. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Alice Carruth, mixing by Elliot Peltzman and Trey Hester, with original music and sound design by Elliot Peltzman. Our associate producer is Liz Stokes. Our executive producer is Jen Iben. Our VP is Brandon Karp. And I'm Maria Varmazis. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.